Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this special session of the Delaware Supreme Court. It's always a pleasure for us to sit here, and Dean Ammons, thank you for inviting us, and we value our relationship with the Widener Law School. I'd also like to acknowledge before we begin the presence of our former colleague, Justice Joseph Walsh, who was a distinguished judge on the Superior Court, the Court of Chancery, and this court, and is now one of your distinguished adjunct professors. So Justice Walsh, it's nice to have you in your class. Are you ready to begin?
Yes.
Very well.
May it please the court, Nicole Walker, on behalf of the appellant, Raymond Blake. Mr. Blake's convictions of trafficking in heroin and trafficking in cocaine violated the doctrine of double jeopardy contained within the United States and Delaware constitutions and the Delaware Code, because the state had already obtained Mr. Blake's convictions of possession on the same drugs. Additionally, the state failed to overcome the rebuttable presumption that it engaged in vindictive prosecution when it reindicted after Mr. Blake's first trial, reindicted him on the count of trafficking in heroin, which it had previously nollie crossed. What happened in this case was that Mr. Blake was originally indicted on two counts of trafficking, one for heroin and one for cocaine. Similarly, he was charged with possession with intent to deliver on two counts. He was also charged with maintaining a vehicle. The state, 2 months prior to trial, nollie-crossed the trafficking in heroin charge, believing incorrectly that they were alleging an amount of heroin that was insufficient to support the trafficking conviction. At Mr. Blake's first trial, he was acquitted of the maintaining charge, and he was also acquitted of both of the possession with intent to deliver charges, but found guilty of the lesser included offenses of possession. And the jury hung on the trafficking in cocaine. After that, the state was permitted to reindict Mr. Blake on the trafficking in heroin and proceed a trial on that as well as the trafficking in cocaine over his objection. Because his trafficking convictions were obtained in violation of the principles of double jeopardy, his convictions of trafficking should be vacated.
Well, let's start with a scenario where there was a conviction at the same trial. The outcome of that would be, under the Fifth Amendment, to merge the possession convictions into the trafficking conviction.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, why is timing important? Why can't that happen at a later time?
Well, the timing is important because of what the United States Supreme Court has held in Brown versus Ohio and additional United States Supreme Court cases, which is once there is a conviction obtained on the lesser included offense, the state cannot then go after a conviction on the greater offense. In fact, in Blackledge versus Perry, the United States Supreme Court said that what a judge can't do at a first trial, which would be to sentence him on both of those crimes, the state can't seek to do in pursuing a second trial. So as the state has conceded in this case, there is a double jeopardy issue with respect to sentencing him on possession and trafficking. Well, if that's the case, then under the United States Supreme Court case law, they were not permitted to go after the trafficking convictions. And in this case, possession is in fact a lesser included offense of both possession with intent to deliver and trafficking. So when that's the case, and they've obtained the conviction of the possession, they cannot then go after the greater offense. And in fact, the Delaware Code even sets that forth at 11 Delaware Code section 206.
There is a admittedly somewhat obscure process for entering a nolle prosequi after conviction.
That's correct.
With the permission of the court.
Mm-hmm.
Could a nolle prosequi after conviction on the possession charges be entered and then proceed with the trafficking sentencing?
Nolle prosequi the possessions, you're saying?
Yes.
And then go after the no, because they've gone after the they've obtained the conviction of the lesser included offense.
Because jeopardy will already have attached.
Exactly right. And what Blackledge versus Perry says is the protection of jeopardy, of double jeopardy, is preventing an entirely second trial. So that actually would violate that holding. So in this case, Well, the concern by the state is, obviously, well, the jury hung the first time. We should get a chance at that again. In Yeager versus United States, the United States Supreme Court said that, in fact, the state or the government can, in fact, be precluded from retrying an individual on hung charges based on acquittals on other charges.
So in Justice Ridgely's scenario, the only circumstance under which the state could nulli-pros without jeopardy attaching is if they do that before the first witness is sworn in the first trial.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. And
well, before we move on, when they conducted the trafficking trial, the second trial, did they present any different evidence than they did at the first trial?
No, they did not. They presented the same exact evidence. And, in fact, they presented, which is interesting, all of the heroin evidence that would support a trafficking in heroin. They presented that at the first trial, but didn't seek the conviction on that charge.
And specifically at the first trial, they introduced the weight of the drugs.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what's the significance of the fact that when we get the trafficking, weight is set out in the statute and it's determinative? If the jury believes the weight, then you can get convicted of trafficking by possessing drugs of that weight. Now, that's not necessarily true with intent to deliver, but if the jury was told about the magnitude of the drugs, the packaging of the drugs, the weight of the drugs, and doesn't find him guilty of possession with intent to deliver, simply possession, what's the significance of that as it relates to your argument?
Your Honor, what would apply here is the collateral estoppel. In fact, for the possession with intent to deliver versus possession, obviously the jury would have to find an intent to deliver. What the state relied on in trying to establish that element is the quantity, and the quantity included what was on Mr. Blake as well as what was in the house. They also relied on the expert opinion of the police officer that it was intent to deliver based on the quantity of what was on Mr. Blake and in the house, and the sale paraphernalia, which was all found in the house. Now,
well, just as a conceptual matter, and to follow up on Justice Holland's question, double jeopardy is a constitutional doctrine. Collateral estoppel is a common law preclusion doctrine. If you're relying on collateral estoppel in these circumstances, what issue precisely was collaterally estopped?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I would say that the collateral estoppel doctrine has been incorporated to double jeopardy, so it is protected. It is an analysis under the Constitution. What's been collaterally estopped is the findings of fact that the drugs in the house belong to Mr. Blake. And because they found that he was not guilty of the intent to deliver, they rejected the state's argument that the quantity in that house and the sale paraphernalia belonged to him. And that's significant because Mr. Blake testified that he didn't live there, that it wasn't his house. He also presented evidence of a state ID showing a different address. And so by acquitting him of the possession with intent to deliver, the jury rejected that he possessed the drugs in the house. And that's significant because what was on Mr. Blake for cocaine was only 3.52 grams, and the state was required to prove 10 grams for the trafficking in cocaine.
Are you saying that the result was an acquittal on the issue of no possession, that is, a finding of no possession, and that finding is final and cannot be collaterally attacked?
If no possession of that portion of the drugs, which was necessary to be found for the drugs to beat the trafficking weight in both the heroin and in the...
Is there not another, at least hypothetical, scenario where the drugs in the house were his, but there was no intent to deliver them, but instead to use them for personal consumption?
Your Honor, no, because in this case the state relied solely on the expert opinion of the officer who relied on the entirety of the drugs. That's the case that the state presented to the jury.
So there was no defense argument that this was a weight that would be consistent with personal use?
No, there was not. In fact, it was all relied on the fact that he did not possess those drugs at all. He did not live there. And with respect to the re-indictment of the possession of heroin, trafficking in heroin, the state failed to overcome a presumption of vindictive prosecution. What happened in this case was the prosecutor made a human error 2 months prior to trial that the amount of drugs of heroin that they had was not sufficient to meet the trafficking weight. And so he nolly-crossed it. But 2 months later at trial, as early as his opening statement, he references all the heroin, which was then actually all introduced at trial. He did not attempt to resurrect the charge at that point. After the trial, when Mr. Blake received only two simple possession convictions, which would lead only up to 2 years in jail, and he subsequently got probation on, the state was permitted to reindict Mr. Blake on the original trafficking in heroin. He had originally faced 8 to 50 years in jail if he had been convicted of the possessions with intent to deliver. And so with the new trafficking, when he was convicted of both of those, he subsequently got 8 years in jail. This is also significant because the police officers were already unhappy with Mr. Blake. The charges had originally been deferred prosecution because he had agreed to help them. And in fact, he did help them for a period of time. He helped get a gun off the street that night that he was arrested, and he also provided credible information going forward. They were unhappy because at one point he decided to stop helping them, and then they resurrected the charges. So we have both of those situations where it creates a legitimate fear. And in Johnson versus State, this court noted that even though there's no presence of actual malice or actual vindictiveness, the court can still reverse the conviction if there's a legitimate fear, if a reasonable person would think there existed a realistic likelihood of vindictiveness. And to circumstances in this case, given the reason for the prosecutor to be unhappy, as well as the police officers, it leads to a reasonable likelihood of vindictiveness.
Let me ask you. As to the sentencing, there was one sentencing proceeding?
Yes.
So the sentencing judge imposed jail on the trafficking convictions and then ultimately sentenced at the end of the sentencing order on the possession charges and imposed probation. Let's assume that we agree with you that the trafficking convictions cannot stand. Does that allow a resentencing on the possession charges where the judge can say, well, you deserve to go to prison, I'm not sending you to prison on trafficking anymore, but now that this has happened, I'm going to send you to prison on the possession?
Yes, Your Honor, in fact, it could. If it's sent back to the court for resentencing, the court could, in consistent with its original sentencing scheme, give him an additional jail time, assuming he has that left at this point. And if not, what we need to look at is what was Johnson Incorporated, which was the North Carolina versus Pierce analysis, which is whether the court engages in vindictive sentencing and whether he can be resentenced on those. But absent some finding of that, then yes, the court could do that. Okay. Unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Elizabeth McFarland on behalf of the state. This case has a very unique set of facts to it, which, as we all know, can lead to anomalies in the law. This was a case where Mr. Blake had two sets of charges. One set included trafficking. The other did not. There was a mix-up with numbers, and the prosecutor made a mistake and did not read the back page of a report, which included additional weights for the heroin. It wasn't just the prosecutor who made a mistake. The defense counsel also said to the court that there was no trafficking weight in this case as to the heroin. Based on that and the everyone's agreement on that issue, the state entered nulla prosequi as to the trafficking charge. At the time of trial, the prosecutor realized that he had missed the backside of the ME's report and that there was, in fact, trafficking weight, but given the timing, felt it was too late to proceed with that charge for that trial.
So was this a misreading of the report or just the failure to add what was on the front and on the back?
I believe it was a failure to add what was on the front and on the back. So that that's it. B1 and 2 of the state's appendix, there are three, there's a listing of one weight for cocaine, heroin on the front, and the remainder of it is on the back, which would lead to sufficient weight.
I don't understand that that the unique facts that you've just recited to us are the subject of any dispute, but my question is, what is their legal relevance given the claims of error that are being made here?
Well, that goes somewhat to both, but it goes particularly to the vindictiveness in that there wasn't any. But in any case, it went to trial and without that trafficking charge, and it went with just the one trafficking charge where there was no error in terms of the MEU's report.
Now, during the course of the first trial, did the prosecutor figure out the total weight?
He did figure it out, yes.
All right. So in the course of making the argument on the charge that went forward, which was possession with intent to deliver, did the prosecutor argue to the jury in considering convicting for possession with intent to deliver, look at this weight?
Yes. The weight was included, and in fact, the ME's report was admitted as evidence.
And then the jury acquitted of intent to deliver.
Yes, that is true. What's unique is that you have a case where the jury acquitted of the possession with intent to deliver and then was hung on the trafficking in the cocaine, and that possession is a lesser included offense of both. That's where it's unusual.
But I think we want to separate the heroin and the cocaine, because at least as far as the legal principles apply, if we're looking at a retrial after a hung jury, you know, it's pretty clear that that's not going to be a double jeopardy problem, absent some unusual circumstances. But the argument really here is when you have a higher offense like possession with intent to deliver, and you're convicted of a lesser offense, and the state wants to use the same evidence to then have a second trial on the higher offense of trafficking, what are the double jeopardy implications?
Well, the trafficking has a different element than the possession with intent to deliver, and there is nothing in the record that actually states what the jury decided in terms of finding the lesser on the...
And what's the different element?
The differing element is the weight versus the intent. You do not have the intent element with trafficking, but you have the weight.
But that's my question. You can be standing with a quantity of drugs. If it's above the weight in the statute, you can be found guilty of trafficking simply by holding that quantity of drugs.
Correct.
So the weight can be determinative in a trafficking conviction.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, with intent, possession with intent to deliver, you don't need that weight, but the weight may be relevant. But in our case, where we're talking about unusual facts, the jury knew the weight. The state argued the magnitude of the weight evidenced an intent to deliver, and the jury rejected that.
Yes, but the jury did not determine as a finding of fact that he had they were not asked to make that determination whether he had sufficient weight to support a trafficking charge in terms of the heroin. That was not an issue before that jury. So the jury could have found that there, no matter how much weight he had, they did not find an intent to deliver.
Let's assume hypothetically the jury acquitted on the possession with intent to deliver and acquitted on the lesser included offense of possession. Would double jeopardy then bar a retrial on the trafficking charge?
Yes, it would, because the jury would have found, would have acquitted on an element that is necessary for the trafficking.
Well, why is the analysis different if there's an acquittal or a conviction? Isn't the analysis the same?
No. Whether there was a conviction, because this conviction in terms of possession was as a lesser included of the possession with intent to deliver. This jury never considered whether or not to convict on the trafficking for the heroin.
Let me say it another way, perhaps, and you can help me because I'm not understanding your answer. If an acquittal on possession would bar a retrial of the trafficking, why doesn't a conviction bar a retrial? Doesn't the statute refer to either an acquittal or a conviction of a necessary element?
But they did not find, they did not consider the other necessary element. So if they convicted on possession, they've only gone halfway. There's no decision on the other element.
But you are retrying the possession charge as an element of trafficking.
Possession, yes.
And you're saying that's okay?
Yes.
And what U.S. Supreme Court or Delaware
Supreme
Court?
Well, because if you're looking at collateral estoppel, you have to be the...
No, I'm looking at double jeopardy. What?
At double jeopardy, because the jury did not consider that other element.
Well, I'm focusing on the one they did consider.
And they convicted on that under a different crime. So there's no... It doesn't, they did not find a fact that would preclude a conviction on the trafficking.
Is there a case of the U.S. Supreme Court or of this court that supports that proposition?
Not in those terms that I'm aware of. But the theory in general of collateral estoppel is that if a court has found or a jury has found that an element that a finding of fact that would preclude moving forward that's relative to the new charge, that would preclude under double jeopardy a retrial on that.
I'm a little confused. The argument that the defendant, the appellant presented to us is that the jury acquitted on the issue of possession, which is a lesser included offense. That is that part of the drug that was necessary to constitute trafficking, the jury found there was no possession.
No, the record is that the jury convicted on possession as a lesser included of possession with intent to deliver.
So, and what do we learn from the jury verdict about the weight of the drugs they thought he possessed?
Nothing, Your Honor.
So we have an anomalous situation here of a jury convicting a defendant of possessing drugs. It could have been the entire weight or the drugs outside the house as opposed to the drugs in the house. But we have a defendant convicted of possession of a certain amount of drugs. He's basically acquitted of possession with intent to deliver, but now he's going to be convicted of trafficking based on the same weight that he was found guilty of possessing.
Well, it's not based exactly. The jury could have found one way or another on the weight, but we don't know. So they didn't make a finding on that, and so there's nothing that would preclude them.
Let me rephrase my question, and this just follows up on the direction in which Justice Holland was going. There was a conviction of possession. The argument is that that by implication, that conviction constituted a finding that a portion of the drugs were not possessed, and therefore would preclude a prosecution for trafficking. Your response is, no, there may be some implication there, but there are no numbers that are attached to it, and therefore we cannot determine whether the jury convicted of possessing all of them or only a portion. Is that your position?
Yes.
And therefore, the principles of collateral estoppel and double jeopardy don't apply because we have this hole in the facts?
Yes, Your Honor, because the jury did not make a finding of the weight, and they only were considering whether he possessed any.
Right. So in this case, as I understand the state's position, at the first trial, he was found guilty of possession. At the second trial, he was found guilty of trafficking. The state's position is double jeopardy bars sentences for both convictions. So he should, the possession convictions have to be put aside, and he can only be sentenced for trafficking. So the state concedes double jeopardy bars two sentences, but double jeopardy doesn't bar two trials.
That's correct, Your Honor, because if the state had proceeded forward as originally planned with two charges of trafficking, two charges of possession with intent to deliver, and the maintaining charge, and the jury had come back with convictions on the trafficking but not on the possession with intent to deliver, or vice versa, but had actually made acquitted or convicted on those, and then found the lesser included of possession, they would merge for sentencing purposes if it had been done at one trial.
But we have cases, don't we, that say you can be tried in at one trial for trafficking and possession with intent to deliver, and those sentences can be separate and stand. They don't have to merge.
That is correct, because they have a different element.
Why doesn't Brown versus Ohio control?
Because in Brown, the defendant entered a guilty plea. He was initially charged with what would be the lesser included of joyriding. He pled guilty to that and was actually sentenced and served his sentence. After that, after he was out of jail, he was indicted on a felony for the same incident that he had already pled guilty to and served a sentence. The state agrees that's inappropriate. There was no hung jury. There was no trial that he pled guilty. He was to what he was charged with, and then they came back later and said, well, no, we're going to reindict on a felony.
And so is it important in this case that he hadn't completed his possession sentence? Let's suppose hypothetically that he'd been sentenced to a short amount of time and it was completed, and then the state wanted to charge him with trafficking.
Well, I think here the important part was that there was a hung jury and that he hadn't been tried on the trafficking at all.
No, that's where I said we've got to use the words heroin and cocaine. So we keep the legal principles straight. So let's stay with the trafficking in heroin, which was nolleprost.
Yes.
And my question is, if he had been found guilty, as he was, of possessing heroin, given a short sentence that was completed before the state could charge with trafficking in heroin, would that second trial be barred by Brown?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because he was never charged with that trafficking of heroin at the time he was convicted of possession under the possession with intent to deliver charge as a lesser included.
But he had been charged with trafficking in heroin, and it was nolleprost.
Correct, but it was nolleprost in advance of that.
So tell us again how you're distinguishing Brown versus Ohio.
Brown versus Ohio, he was charged only with the lesser, was convicted by plea of the lesser, and subsequently charged of the higher. In this case, we never charged a possession and then convicted and then went back on the heroin. We charged a different crime entirely, possession with intent to deliver.
So it's the charging decision, not the conviction, that matters?
Well, this is where I go back to my unique set where you have the lesser included of one charge that can be tried alongside the other charge being the same. It complicates the issue.
So the charge here was possession with intent to deliver, but the defendant was successful in convincing the judge to give a charge on the lesser included offense of simple possession, and that's what the jury picked.
That's correct, Your Honor. It's a separate charge. That would be the state's position.
Now, with regard to this vindictive prosecution, the argument we're hearing is that there's a presumption we should apply, but at least in most of the cases, the presumption doesn't arise until you have a situation like a successful appeal or something like that. Do you know of any cases where this presumption has applied when there is a dismissal and then a subsequent trial and everything occurs at the trial level?
No, Your Honor. And the state's contention is there is no presumption unless the defendant asserts some constitutional right and then has greater charges placed on him for doing so. That was not this case.
Well, I thought the state's position was going to be, at this procedural posture, there's not a presumption at all. It's simply a fact-intensive inquiry. Was it vindictive or was it not vindictive? But there's no presumption operating.
Correct. And the state contends that the Superior Court judge correctly found that there was no vindictiveness in the prosecutor's actions.
Very well.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Your Honor, the state presents this court with an inconsistent position. It states that if Mr. Blake had been convicted of possession and trafficking in one case, then yes, they merged because there's a double jeopardy problem. But apparently the double jeopardy problem goes away if they want to actually seek a second conviction. And there's no distinction made in double jeopardy with respect to sentencing and convictions in that respect. And there's nothing that indicates that whether someone has completed their sentence or not makes a difference with respect to double jeopardy. And just one last point on the vindictive prosecution. The case relied on by the lower court was State versus Moran, a Superior Court case. But in that case, it was all at the trial level. There was a mistrial that was created at the first trial, and then the court addressed the second trial. In that case, however, the court found that the state overcame a presumption of vindictiveness. However, in this case, we would just state that the facts reveal that the state did not overcome that presumption.
So what facts do you rely on to show that it was vindictive? I know you said that the police were upset. But what we hear from Ms. McFarland is the prosecutor and the defense attorney simply didn't add the weight up correctly because they never got to the second page, which was an innocent mistake on both parts. They went to trial, the actual weight came out, and then when it was over, realizing that they could charge with trafficking in heroin, that's what they did. So there was nothing Machiavellian about it.
Right. I think the record, though, reveals that as soon as the jury verdict came in at the first trial, this prosecutor immediately announced, I'll tell you right now, I'm going to try it. I'm going to reindict him on the heroin and trafficking. And when you couple that with the results that he obtained, which were nowhere near what it was that they sought with respect to
where
sentencing.
Can we read that in the record?
It's at A54.
Well, going back for a moment to double jeopardy and collateral estoppel, you know, when this court writes opinions, it has to do so in the language of doctrine. So can you explain to us what, in doctrinal terms, what is incorrect about the argument that we're being presented with by the state?
That it's inconsistent. They noticed, they recognized double jeopardy and they recognized this court's prior holdings and its prior concessions that a conviction of trafficking and possession cannot stand. They either need to merge or the sentencing needs to merge. However, they say that if they try to get those convictions at two separate trials, then that's okay. and then they can get both convictions.
Well, why not follow through? I think their argument is, but then you follow through and merge them later.
Well, it's the point, it goes back to, he was put in jeopardy twice. He should not have even had that second trial.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And thank you both for your arguments. They're very helpful. The court will take this matter under advisement and will also take a brief recess.